Hello and welcome to the Mistcast table. Today we're going to talk a little bit of a battle report and some general discussions around Easter happenings. And the first off, I'm here, André, and with me also I have Martin. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
We also have Mons on stream. How are you doing, Mons?
I'm doing not so fine. I'm getting a bit sick and I have sick kids at home. And but that, otherwise, it's good.
And that's also why we are on stream today, because we don't want to get sick.
Yeah, we're on distance. We're not meeting in person.
No, but it's fine too. That's we can try out our tech, our computers, and video cameras and stuff from home. So it's gonna be hopefully no technical issues. Even we are doing this on stream, say. First off, we have Easter. It's the 2nd of April, and all of us have been away for a little bit. Martin, what have you been doing with your time on Easter?
Well, as little as possible, but been out riding snowmobiles and ice fishing, barbecuing. Just a long weekend. So it's been calm and nice, and pretty much no contact with the outer world. So that's a dream. How about you?
I've been actually doing some hobbing. I also been up to a mountain cabin for a while, and I brought with me what's they called? That it's a Wood Elf Blood Bowl team that I have gave all of them weapons, so I'm gonna play them as war dancers. They are a little bit bigger than I anticipated, but I think they're gonna fly as a war dancer. And I also had with me a name I can't say with is Scepter Knights or something, but I made the lizards from Tomb Kings. It's a hard name. The three snakes that can go in ambush. Big
Sepulchre Knights.
Yes, Tomb Kings. Yeah. But not the knights. When it's only a.
Oh, yeah, only the snakes.
Stalker. Scepter Stalker, Sepulchre Stalker.
But this is for the Tomb Kings, right?
Yeah, that's from Tomb Kings. So I've been gluing them and modding the Blood Bowl team so I can play them in Wood Elves. Mons, any hobbying or any just having fun?
It's Easter, so you have to do something outside. So I've been skiing a little bit, downhill skiing. But I also been hobbying quite a lot. I'm maybe going to a tournament, the Old World Tournament, in the end of April. I'm as a reserve right now. And I'm going to play Orcs and Goblins. So I am currently painting 45 Night Goblin Archers, to play with the Spider Banner, of course.
End of
April. Poisonous attacks, right?
Yeah. Spider-Ban gives poisonous attacks, and that was really good before in 8th edition, and it should be pretty good here as well, because a lot of like big monsters and stuff don't have that great armor save, just big toughness. No. So poison is king.
You can take down giants with that.
Yeah,
yeah. Someone did a while ago in an upcoming battle report.
But I mean, end of April, we're going to London.
And yeah, it's the week before London.
Jesus.
It's the Fnatic in Umeå, right?
Yeah, but I'm as a reserve right now, so I'm not sure if I'm going.
The reserve, is it because it's full?
Yeah, it is full. It is full.
Oh, that's good that the tournament in... They haven't had... That's the first time that tournament has the Old World, so it's really positive that it has full of players.
And I really hope that they open up more spots, because they're doing 40k, AOS, and the Old World. And the Old World is the only section that is full. They still have places left for both 40k and AOS. They have a bigger like pool allocated for those games. But if they aren't filled, they should definitely open up more spots in the Old World, because it seems like the interest is really there. And we just had the release of Orcs and Goblins, the new models for pre-ordering. And I bought the Bone Crusher Giant and the
Yeah.
Orc Warbossom Wyvern. So I have a lot of painting to do if I want to get ready for that tournament, but it should be fine.
I bought the
But I...
cards from the latest batch.
The orcs card.
Yeah, and the book.
Yeah.
I
But
might borrow
I
that from
heard,
you.
speaking of tournaments, I read something yesterday about a generic comp where you play 1999 plus 1 points. Have you heard about that?
No.
Yeah, I've heard about that. To
Yeah, it's
reduce
a,
like monsters and stuff.
yeah, to reduce the possibility of double monsters. Because in some armies, if you just cap it at 1991, 1999 plus 1 points, so you comp it, and then you can't pick out two giant monsters
Yeah, so you play
in many of
2,000
the armies.
points, but you have a point limit of like you play as it's a 1,999 point limit, but you can use 2,000 points still.
I think you also get access to a little less characters, so you might only have one lord slot or something.
Yeah, it's something about 1 per 1,000 points.
Yeah.
There's a lot of units that work that way as well. You can have 1 per 1,000 points. And those also get capped in that kind of comp. So I'm not sure. I haven't tried it.
Haven't played so many games, so I can't really. It's too early for me to tell what kind of comp I would like. I need to. What I really need to do, I need to go on a tournament for the Old World, both to get the rules right, because it's nothing like a tournament to get better at the rules and better at the game, and also to start feeling, is it a tournament kind of game? Because I'm really curious on that, and it's only one way to find out, and it's to play in a tournament. You are the only one who has gone to a tournament. I don't know if you can speak about it, Mons.
I think it played really well, and the games went really quick. It takes more time to play in an 8th edition tournament, and most people who play in 8th edition tournaments nowadays are pretty well versed in the game, pretty like know the rules pretty well. And even though the tournament I played, most people had played like one or two games tops, the game still flowed really smoothly, and there was never any like time problems. So I think it's a game that works well for tournaments, but it's not really figured out yet either. We'll see more when it's kind of like quote unquote sold. Like people still don't know what's really good and what isn't. I think they're still up for debate, so.
Yeah, and tournaments play 2,000 points, right? Instead of 2,500. So
Yeah,
that's a
usually
solid
2,000.
extra unit that disappears.
Yeah. But I
Yeah.
guess this game is kind of made for 2,000 points,
Yeah.
I guess.
Feels like that.
Something I really want us to do sometime on the channel, and this people can comment about in the comment section as well, what you think about this. But I really want to try to play a game with less points, maybe like 500 points. Because one of the things I had on my wish list for the old world was to make it accessible for new players. And I think that the ability to be able to play smaller scale games is a huge part of that because that makes it easier to get into the game. So I really want to try that out and see how it works.
Do you know what the boxes that they deliver, like the battalion boxes, is that 1,000 or 1,200 points?
I
Because
think.
I figure that's like the smallest scale I would go down to, basically. Otherwise, you have a lot of units of 5 models in each and so
Now
on.
it follows me. I have it here. I'm not sure if it says on the box.
I think we have calculated that once. And it's between I am not sure anymore, but I think it's somewhere around 1,000 points, and it depends how much points you put in the lore, because both of the boxes and all of the boxes have one hero, and it's so different how
Yeah.
big you
But
can
it
make
doesn't
them.
say on the box how many points it is. It doesn't say.
No, so but I think it's around 1,000 points, so maybe that's a start, or do you want to go down to 500 points and make a game?
Yeah, probably. I think like even painting one of these boxes is quite a huge commitment.
Yeah, it
Like,
is.
I would like to see how it works for like real beginners. Like, how early can you start playing your army? How much time do you need to spend until it's,
I
yeah,
think
until you
it's
can
a good
start
idea.
playing instead?
I'm up for it, making a list of only 500 po points and see what we can do. I think it's fun.
One dragon.
No vampire accounts.
And we're done.
Spamming.
You can't do that because of the lore
No,
and the
that's true.
heroes.
Yeah.
No.
It's a thematic battle.
Yeah. Usually I guess that an army like vampire accounts gets very powerful in that kind of low point. If I am allowed to bring more units, it's easy to make my units bigger or take in other units. So it's quite a big difference. If I take in a unit, only if it's worth 70 points, I take it's so much big difference against the opponents. So that it gets
Yeah, summoning is very strong, I think,
summoning
as
gets
one
very
games.
strong in that. Also, like magic in general get strong because they are based on pretty big units. If you have say 2d6 hits, it makes a lot of difference if you have a small unit. But interesting it would be, as Yoda would have said. I can start to move on to the battle report. So we had a game on the channel where you played Skaven works versus Orcs and Goblins. And first off, I would like to split the episode up into like four parts, and we have a rules discussion and a tactic discussion. But first off, we had a comment from Jörgen for Jörgen, we guess just say Jörgen. He had a lot of question about things that we couldn't see on the stream. And since it was a short format, some parts got cut out. And I was thinking that we might clear some of those questions first. And he had it looked like your vortex spells after move was over some unit and you let it stay there. Why did I misunderstand? So there you had two vortex spells of the Foot of Gork that was traveling around the board. Was it any time that they stayed over a unit and probably Martin's unit if they stayed over the unit? They did. They
No,
did.
that no. They
No,
never
they
stayed over the
didn't.
unit. They always passed through the unit. I can say about the vortex spells. Like first of all, I had two wizards with that spell, and I recast it basically every turn. So it was that's why it might seem like they were jumping around, and that was because I was canceling them and recasting them. But when they moved through a unit, they pop up on the other side. But it happened that the I think your
The
rat ogre was
ogres.
standing on top of them, but that was because you charged through it. And you're
No,
allowed to
no.
charge.
I fled. I lost combat and I fled
Yeah,
into
that's
it.
right.
And then
That's right.
when it's placed, it only moves at the start of the every turn, and then it's dangerous terrain. So you can be on it, but the vortex can't end on a unit.
Yeah, so you can stand in the vortex, but the vortex itself cannot stop on top of a unit.
There
So
you
that.
actually you actually took a lot of questions in one go, because most of the questions regarding the vortex spells is why did Martin never dispel them? But
Yeah.
then it was that Martin did dispel them, but you casted them again.
Yeah,
I actually
because.
didn't dispel a single one, I think, because every time it was the vortex moves at the start of the conjuration phase before I can dispel them. And every time they moved in Morn's disadvantage. So I just let them stay. Because hopefully he won't be able to recast it and then it's in his own way. Because I think there was one time where it passed through. Like, it was bad for me, but it didn't matter. And I
No.
only have a level 2 wizard. I could probably dispel it, but to what avail? When it's not in the way, I'm not gonna waste time on it. If it's more inconvenient for Morns to have it on the table.
And they were really easy for me to cast. I had two level fours, but since I put my Orc Shaman in a block of orcs is basically a level 5 because it gets plus 1 to cast. So I just cancel them and recast them, cancel them, recast them all the time. And as you said, they usually move to my disadvantage, like away from the units and stuff. So you didn't really have any good chance to do it. And you also only have a eight,
Level two.
yeah, which needs to be within 18 of the casting wizard. And you weren't always that close.
No, because I played a pretty passive list, and that's not great with a level two wizard. It's just a little inside secret. Passive list, level two wizard, might as well skip it. It's
Yeah.
just trash.
I think that's a good segue to first off I hope that Jörgen is happy with your answer, but I think you answered it quite good that the vortex spells often was at Mon's disadvantage, so Martin chose to not dispel it. And with that we can move on to the list itself. So when you created the list for this game, Martin, were you thinking about that your opponent is going to be orcs and goblins so that you made the list for that opponent, or did you just make a generalist? This is what I want to play.
This was I actually replied to a similar comment a bit further down where he pointed out that it was a bit heavy on the influenced from 8th edition, and I can't stand more corrected than that. Last fall, I decided to build a pure pestilence army, and that's why I have many plague monks and I have the plague claw catapults, and it's a bit narrow way of building an army in the old world, but I really wanted to try it out.
You
I
wanted
didn't
a
know that.
thematic army with pestilence.
And I didn't know what Mons was bringing to the table, so I was hoping for something with high armor saves, and my shooting was pretty good, at least. But the synergy, the composition wasn't really there. I needed some other units, and like my ranking of the Plague Monk was just stupid. I had them in marching column. That's a real heavy remnant. I just had them on a preset tray and like, oh, this is third five, perfect. Place them on the table. So dumb. And it's also a passive list. What the hell did I need the triple movement for in a unit that I was gonna stand still with?
that's a bit weird.
Yeah, so it's a purely thematic list, but I have giant rats on the in a small cabinet here that's next on the painting table because I want the rat swarms and the plague and everything because it's fun mostly. I'm not gonna argue that it's a strong list in any way.
I just want to move back a little bit to what, like, if Martin knew that he was playing Orcs and Goblins. And as a general thing, like, we never kit against each other's lists. Like, usually we don't know what the other opponent is playing. But even if we do, we never kit specifically towards that list. Because I think all of us really want to play lists that could face off against any other list. Like, it's not fun just playing a tech list for a specific matchup. We usually play lists that we think can do all right against any list.
We have done it when we played the 2 versus 2. You remember
Yeah.
that game?
Yeah.
But then it was secret what we were playing in each. So we tried to figure out what the other team were building, and then we tried to make the nastiest thing against it as possible. But we had
Yeah.
no idea. But that was the only time we really tried, that I am aware of, at
Yeah,
least.
usually we don't tech against each other's lists.
No. Might come up sooner or later if there's some interest to see that kind of list building, but I'm not so good at that either. I want to play thematic and well-balanced list that can handle like four or five armies in a good way.
I think that's fun. The funniest list to build is when you're going for a tournament and you don't know your opponent. So you have to think and make it all round. That's a you can I can build 10 15 lists during waiting for the tournament, just because it's fun to make lists, and it's usually the same kind of list building when we go onto the channel, usually.
And we have, all of us have so many armies, so you can't really guess what your opponent is playing either. Like, I have probably like five playable armies. Andrea has probably even more. Martin,
Eight,
you have.
I think eight. Yeah, I have
Yeah.
four. I would say four.
Jonas has three, so it's like you can face off against almost anything.
Martin and Jonas have to get cracking.
Yeah.
Do some
We,
painting.
yeah, but I'm leaning a hefty way against for dwarfs right now. Even though I don't think they suit my play style, but I think that's pretty much the only army we don't have represented between us, the four of us. Pure dwarves. We have chaos dwarves, but not pure dwarves.
That's true.
Yeah.
But Mons, we heard that Martin, he had made a very thematic list going for Pestilence. What was your thinking when you created your list? Did you have any thematic plan or a strategic plan? This is what I want to try.
When I played in the tournament, I faced off against an Orcs and Goblins player, and I found out quite quickly that Orcs and Goblins magic is really, really strong. You can lower toughness, and I think toughness and initiative by D3. You have the snipe spell that is toughness 7 or toughness, no, strength 7 or strength 8.
Vindictive glare. Yeah,
Yeah,
the
with
glare
D3
thing.
wounds and a lot of like really, really strong spells.
Yeah, you just
So
straight up killed my hell pit.
yeah, with the that one, with Vindictive glare. So I just wanted to try out like a very magic heavy Orcs and Goblins list and see how good the magic truly is. And it is good. It is very good. I think Var Magic is the best lore. Is that a bold statement to make?
I
But I
mean,
think it is. If you take a goblin shaman, so you can get access to the signature spell that they have that lowers, I think it's toughness and initiative
yeah.
by D3. Like, that is insanity. Together with like Vindictive Glare and
Itchy
stuff.
Nuisance, maybe?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
remember that name.
Yeah, Itchy
Maybe
Nuisance
that's
is
what it's
from 8th
called.
edition, but I think it's the same here. It does something with initiative.
Yeah.
I mean, you could play a pretty defensive list. You were basically the defensive player. You could scale down your blocks in that army and put in, I don't know, fanatics. They're very, very strong, like the swinging things.
I
Yeah, I
thought
think
about
orcs and
bringing
goblins are very strong.
I thought
What
about
were you gonna say?
bringing a lot of fanatics and Vindictive Glare. So having shamans as snipers and then just waiting for them to run into fanatics.
I think it's quite hard to build a strong Night Goblin list. Because for every Night Goblin block you take, you need to have a Night Goblin character.
There where I wished to have a shaman that have Vindictive Glare. So a lot of Vindictive Glare and then unit of but I'm not sure how many I can take. Maybe I can have two and then I need two lords and something because of the character caps.
Yeah, I think actually a goblin shaman is better because then you can put it on a chariot. Yeah, if you want to play night goblins, and I think night goblins is the way to go, at least one block of night goblins, then you need to take a night goblin shaman probably.
But did we have any VIPs? A unit that you put in or tried that you felt this unit was really good? We can start with Martin.
I would say what was it called? The Plague Furnace was really fun, but it's a bit of a swing and a miss because it has a flame template weapon, a breath weapon as well. But since it's so good in combat, you really want to get it in and punching and supporting combat. So I don't know, I would rather have like one more toughness than a breath weapon, because you can't do much with it, basically. But I would say it's not the last time I play with the Plague Furnace.
Orcs and Goblins, VIP.
My VIPs probably have to be the magicians. It's really hard to say anything else.
Level four.
Yeah, but I don't think you should put it on an Agnarok spider like I did. I don't think that's the play. But I definitely think my magicians is VIP.
Arachnoid Spider, he is a monster, right?
Yeah, he's a monster. He hits pretty hard and stuff like that, but putting your usually like monsters you want to get into combat and wizards you don't want to get into combat. So it's kind of like yeah, it's a bit counterproductive, I guess, to put a magician on a monster a lot of times.
I would like to try having a super combat wizard that is on a monster and have lots of assignment spells. So you just
Yeah, he's
throw it must be fun to try, but I don't really have any good army for that, but it would be cool to try out.
gonna shred for sure. But separate units, I had one unit of clan rats that stood up to a unit of trolls, but that was 100% because of Mon's super poor rolling, like
The trolls
abysmal
were not the
rolling.
VIPs, I can tell you that.
No, they
It
weren't. But
was
that's
horrible.
in this game. I would say overall, if you roll bad, don't bring the trolls. That's
Yeah.
don't bring anything basically, because that was poor. I
That
won by a
was.
musician against a unit of trolls
Yeah.
with great weapons.
And me and Jonas played a battle report yesterday. That's gonna come out in a few weeks, I guess. And if you want to see some poor rolling, that's a great one. I won't tell for who or what happened, but there were some very
Cursing
bad
of the
battles.
dice. It was
Yeah.
very quiet in the group chat that evening.
Yeah. It's really bad.
We have talked a
Can you
little bit.
spoil what you played?
We played Empire against Bretonnia. I was playing Empire.
Okay.
We have talked a little bit about the list building, and I think we could move on to some user comment that have some tactical advice. We have LSOP. He also mentioned and asked why you didn't dispel the Foot of Gork, but that one we have answered. He said that this was a very strange game. The Skaven player bring bad habits from 8th edition, units deeper than wide. The Plague Priest unit is in margin column. And then you also touched on that you did you change your mind during the game, or did it matter?
The marching column.
Yeah, you can't charge. You can't
Yeah,
complete a charge.
no. That was just a stupid, convenient way to pick them out of the cabinet and place them on the table. I wasn't gonna move them up in any way or form. They were just gonna stand and be like a standstill unit, basically. So they should be in a wide formation, no doubt about it. Most likely, I should have taken two smaller units as well, but it's just
Next
stupid
game.
mistake. Yeah.
He also pointed out that he think that artillery is no good in this edition. Drop the catapults and have more wizard. Do you agree that the artillery did wasn't worth the points? The plague
Yeah.
claw?
Yeah, I would have to say it's not worth the points, but they're a fun model, and against high armor targets, they can do some damage that other models can't.
But I think in general, like I also have my Doom Divers, and the Doom Divers are way worse in the old world. All artillery are. And as a general, like a rule of thumb, I would say they're not worth it. Like you only have D3 wounds in the center hole, strength 8 in the middle, which is good, but only strength 4 on the sides, and a high risk of like partial hits as well.
Is it
Yeah.
strength
So.
four on the sides?
At least the Goblin Doom Diver is.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, but
Four.
it's there's so big chance of like you have a 50-50 with the partial hits
Yeah, that's
to even
true.
hit anything, and usually there's not that many cover models that are completely covered. So I don't know. And like the Doom Divers, they only get to adjust, I think it's 1d3
Yeah.
right now. And
But an
yeah, I
easy
think.
fix would be, at least for the play clock catapult, it works like it's a low strength but high armor penetration. It's like a sickness that it vomits out or something. And to just have them, they out the wound on sixes, I think, and they are AP 3 or 4. But I would say even partially covered models should be hit with that specific model. That would fix a lot of the issues.
Yeah, I think so. But like when I'm building a list and I have to cut something because I want to put something in, it's usually like war machines are the first things to go.
David Oliver has a comment. It's basically for Martin, but it's I think it's a general question, and most other channels have touched on this too. You need a level 4 wizard playing this game, right? Yeah. If I he said I run my plague priest on Furnace without taking any wizard levels. Add a Grey Seer at level 4 and you have a better time.
Not sure I agree on the statement about that you need a level 4 wizard. It depends on how you play the game. Like, you have still have to be within 24 to be able to dispel. And when you're within with your level 4 with their level 4, you both have like, it's like an even playing field. And usually you, at least I try to stay out of, a lot of times I try to stay out of the range of my opponent's wizard, unless he has something specific to cast that I know I want to dispel.
Is it already with level 3 that you don't have 24 inch range on the spell? No,
No,
it's
you're still at
1 and 2.
24.
Level 2. So there's level 3 can dispel at 24 inch. Okay. So level
But the
3.
difference, if you're within range with a level 2 against level 4, you basically have no chance of dispelling anyway.
No.
Or no chance, but the chance is really low.
And that's kind of what I mean, that it's so big of a difference if your opponent have a level 4 and you don't, it makes it a very hard time to get spells on or dispel spells.
But there are ways around that as well. As someone mentioned, you can have a fast army and pin down the enemy
Yeah.
wizard, and that's a lot less of points. One wizard can be equal to 3 fast cav units. But you are giving up round 1 and 2, most likely,
I think
in my.
magic in this game is pretty easy to play around. Like lo most of the spells have a pretty short range, and if you know what your opponent has for spells, and it's not that bad. Like in other editions, they can be like game ending, the spells. They're not in this game, and you can play around them without a level 4, I think.
I think that the vortex spell that makes it impassable terrain.
Yeah, that's the illusion one, the
Illusion
crystal.
spell that makes you so you stop a unit. That's a game breaking spell. If you're playing an opponent that wants to make a charge, you can get so good board control with that spell. So it actually is very powerful. It doesn't kill a unit, but it's so powerful to make a unit just stop in their track and say, no, you are going nowhere.
I agree. That spell is incredibly strong. And some spells are. But I'm not sure I agree that you need a level 4. I don't think so. Because I magic isn't as game breaking in this game. Like
It's not, and a wizard is a lot of points. I'm still on the fence, but I prefer playing an army with wizards, definitely. But back to the question about the plague priest on a furnace
Yep.
without wizard levels. Yeah, it the plague furnace is a heavy chariot, and it really brilliance in combat where it lowers the toughness of the opponent units. And you don't want to lock up a wizard in that combat. Otherwise, I'm all for placing them on a chariot, but this is a bad version of a combat chariot that is dragged along, so you need to allocate another unit that can push it forward and so on. So he is, I would say he is on point with that comment. Don't put the wizard.
Don't put the wizard on the plague furnace.
Yeah, don't put the wizard levels on the plague priest.
Yeah, sorry. That was actually the tactical comments we got for the video, so we can move on to our rules mistakes. And the rules mistakes are very short as well. It's two comments.
Because we cut them all away because we did short version.
Yeah, the short version sure makes a difference. Or you play the perfect game, but I don't think we are close to the perfect game. We are going to address something that, and we haven't talked about this between each other, or at least I don't feel that we have. Petra Mayer says, your orc unit bases increase the facing of the unit. Some people might see this as cheating. And I can take Mons in defense and say that actually that the orcs are on trays that make them the correct size. It's the Skaven who actually is on smaller bases. Am I correct?
You are correct, but I'm not sure that the trays that I have, they are to increase them to the correct size. But I'm not sure if, like, at the absolute side, if they give a bit extra on the side. I'm not sure about that. I haven't measured. But I would say that is a problem even in the older editions, because usually in the older editions as well, you have your units and movement trays. And a lot of the times you measure from the movement tray instead of the model. So yeah, it could potentially be, but I've never encountered that problem.
I
No,
think I at least I assumed that he saw it was hard to tell that the Skaven army is actually on smaller bases than they should be. They are on the ordinary 8th edition base sizes, so they look way smaller. When the unit trays that I print out is exactly the size or the conversion tray, to say that when I have a 25 mil base, I put it on a tray that makes them as big as that they were 30 mil, then the tray is exactly as big as it should be. But even if it's 1 millimeter in difference, have anyone actually measured the GV bases? They differ in
yeah, they
up to
do.
1 millimeter. The bases that comes in the box is off by up to 1 millimeter.
But I didn't place mine on the conversion trays because, one, they're Skaven and it's pretty much a day's work to do that. And two, I would say it makes very small differences. I would say the largest difference when I placed them five, that would be an extra unit in the side. It would be an extra 25 millimeters on the side. And when you're wheeling, that's when the big impact comes if you haven't placed them on the correct trays. Otherwise, since you're fighting the whole front rank, it doesn't really impact the game so much.
I have to go and measure the bases to see if they are correct or not. This
I,
is gonna haunt me if I don't.
you have the Mini War Gaming base set. I
Yeah, I
think
do.
they are big enough, but the thing that's wrong with those bases is that the center is off. So the outside of the base is the lining around the size is as thick as the middle
Yeah,
one, and then the center becomes off.
when you
Yeah.
place two trays next to each other and
Yeah.
they're a bit slanted, but
Yeah,
it's marginal.
it's marginal.
but in the side they are 30 mil. So there shouldn't be any difference. Maybe you can argue that the corner sticks out a little bit, but I mean it's the same as with movement trays, and I never encountered any problems with that before. But it's definitely something you should think about.
We usually just put units close to each other, and then we calculate in our head and say that okay, I have 20 mil or 25 mil wide, I have them 6 wide, you have 30 mil wide, you have this many, then we know how many should be hitting or not, because
Yeah,
how
but
wide they should be. Because you can rarely put two units against each other because they have things pointing out in the way, and so we often just calculate how many should hit.
yeah,
Yeah,
and
when they're on
still.
the center, of course, we just calculate like you said. There are instances where they come into like a weird angle
Yeah.
where it does matters, but usually they just come from the front, you maximize, and then you just know that these many can hit.
Yeah,
Like,
and it's all, and in the old world, it's the whole front rank, so it's much easier,
yeah.
anyways.
The
But
biggest
I think the
biggest
difference,
movement.
if you're smaller than you should be, you get an advantage moving over the table.
Yeah.
Wheeling is less.
And if you're wider than you should be, then you get a wider like viewing angle for
Yeah,
sharks and stuff. But
sure, that's
so.
true. It could be. The second rule question or comment is from Acrylnik. Your rat auger unit has one too many handlers. It's one pair, two rat augers, including the master molder, are the max. So you can only have three, including master molder. And I thought that Martin, you didn't calculate or add the master molder as a handler, right?
No, I read it wrong and put him. I my list was 5 rat ogres and 3 handlers, pretty much. 2 handlers and a master molder, and I took 6 rat ogres and 3 handlers, so it was a reading mistake on my part.
This feels like a trial for Martin. Like
Yeah, I feel
we're
really
accusing
yeah.
him of
This
things, and
is the second time I play
he has to
Skaven.
defend himself.
And the last time, you remember, I played like in older editions with 2 units on the side, like a horde formation with
Yeah.
the chariot.
Yeah.
So I've been grilled to bits about my Skaven playing
Yeah.
skills.
Acrylnik is spot on, and we are thankful for the comments so that we have a chance to become better.
Yeah, absolutely. And once you've read something, it's so, and you play. It's like so obvious in your head until someone points it out to you. You don't go back and you rarely go back and rule check something that you're like, it's so imprinted in your memory that this is the way to play.
And often when you read rules, you read them into your advantage. So if you read
Yeah.
them, you think it f as for your sake, for the best way as you did. It's just
Yeah.
natural to do so. So
The way I want them to
yeah.
play.
So it's so
Definitely.
helpful that we get comments that correct us and make us better.
Yeah, and I have to say something that you talked about before, Andrea. The cursive text in the rule book, like there's a small cursive text.
I
And
know.
there's where the most important part is.
I
When you look
guess.
at line of sight, we looked at it yesterday, line of sight. And we read it, and yeah, we were agreeing. And then this morning, we found that there's an extra text in cursive, and that's the most important part of the entire line of sight thing. It's so dumb. Like, why is it made
It
like that?
is.
The audio listeners, though, who don't see the video, you couldn't see how I frantically nodded my hands or head and put my hands in the air. I'm s still super annoyed that the cursive text in the book is so important. That's important for everyone who read the rule book. You need to read the cursive text, and you
Yeah.
need to read it closely. I have skipped it first time, and that's
Absolutely.
stupid.
And that's because of old habits. The
Yeah.
cursive text has always been the lore part of the rule, and then the rule is in ordinary text.
Well, it still is the lore part. So they have lore part in cursive,
Yeah.
and then they have some rule text, and then they have like rules again in cursive. Now, I'm not gonna go into this again, but it makes me mad.
it makes me
Yeah, but
mad as well.
they haven't put rules in the lore part before,
No.
that I am aware of at least. We all might have been playing everything wrong. But
Maybe.
I agree, when I read the spells, I don't want to read how the wizard swings his staff. I want to read what does it do, and you read the regular text. And there's something weird in the cursive.
Yeah, it's really a pain in the butt, so say.
Yeah. But we like discussing rules,
Yeah.
so
Maybe not everybody does, but we do. We have some I would say that the last segment for today is some MISC comment that I found either interesting to just talk a little bit about, or the first one, I'm not sure if he's trolling us or not, but he his name is Sirvirver. He says, "I don't like your Arknock alternative. Stop munching on meatballs, sell the Star Destroyer, and get the proper model, Swede." We like all comments, and this one is pretty fun.
He's not happy with my Agnarok spider.
No.
I would actually like the actual model. This isn't something that we talk that much about, like our stance on like 3D printing and third party models and stuff like that. And I think for most of us, we do like to have the actual model. But we're not opposed to getting 3D printed ones if they're out of stock from Games Workshop or if they're not printed anymore or a lot of that stuff. And the reason my Agnarok Spider is 3D printed is because I was trying to buy it, but it was out of stock everywhere. And I really wanted to play it in a game, so I printed it and used it. But I think we're generally open to both like third party models and 3D printing. But if possible, we would like to have the originals. But
Yeah, and as long as it's the baseline is pretty much as long as it's clear what the unit is, you can't put up a horse and say it's a spider. That's a bit of a stretch, but as long as it's clear, I don't mind a 3D printed model. I do prefer the original Games Workshop because of the coherency it creates in an army.
Yeah, it has like the Games Workshop style, and you can clearly see that my Agnarok Spider isn't a Games Workshop model, and it's like to say like cohesion, like it looks the same.
I prefer painted. As long as the opponent has pa had painted his army, I don't really care if it's original or not. I personally prefer having the original, but I also have a bad habit of collecting things, so but I don't hold that against any opponent if he has a 3D printed army,
No.
as long as it is printed, painted, then I think it's perfectly fine.
I would say again with the coherency we had an ogre army at Dalaslaget that was 3D printed and it was like bang on the money. It was so beautiful. You know, what was he called? Mikael, I think.
I'm not sure who had that one, but I know which army you're talking about. And for I'm speaking more for myself. Like, I don't care as long as they're painted. I agree 100%. But for myself, I like to add the original stuff if possible.
But there are 3D printed or designs that I do think is better than Games Workshop. There are some 3D printed designers that do amazing models.
Absolutely.
I would agree, and I think like. Take the my favorite example is the Chaos Spawns. Like Games Workshop Chaos Spawns, they're so freaking ugly. Like I would never pay money for that. I would definitely, if I want some Chaos Spawns, I will 3D print them or buy a third party. Because they're not good. They're just ugly. So I'm
And
not opposed to buying from Games Workshop, but the models have to be good as well. If they're not, I'm gonna go somewhere else.
quickly on to the
Yeah.
next comment from Jeremy Blondox. I quite like the goblin boss on the Arknock. Where did you get it from?
I'm not sure what the creator is. It's from my mini factory. I bought it. I just searched for probably goblin on spider or something like that. And I 3D printed it. I have four 3D printers in my basement.
That was
And you don't print armies.
I don't print armies that much, but I print terrain and I print bases. And yeah, I also have some dwarves and stuff I have on the table here, 3D printed stuff.
I find it harder to sit down and paint a 3D printed model because it's worth less money. If I have an expensive model, if I have an expensive model, I sit down and paint it. But if it's a 3D printed model and it's like worth 10 kroners, I have a harder time putting in the effort making it look good.
So you have something in common with Måns then.
Maybe.
He likes money.
Yeah, he likes money.
But I don't think like that because it's easy to say that now, but I don't think I will ever sell something that I myself have painted. Because all the effort that I've gone into it, I really don't want to sell something I put effort into. So I don't see my armies as like money, or I don't see the value in them because I'm never gonna sell them. So I don't think of it that way. Like as soon as I bought and paid for them, like I'm never gonna getting that money back because I'm keeping it until I die. So 3D printed or real, it doesn't matter.
I would say that I'm not planning on selling anything basically, even though I have too much. But it's nice to know that they retain a value very good. So I mean, if you were to go like super broke and had to sell stuff to get food, there is still money in the armies. And the secondhand value has gone up quite a lot.
But that is also money you could have saved by 3D printing in the first place.
Yeah,
But
it
I
is. It
guess the
is.
argument I guess holds,
Yeah,
but
I wouldn't
no.
sell anything, but it's nice to know that it's not worthless pieces of junk in the cabinet.
I have sold armies. I have sold three armies, and well, two of them I painted a little on, and one of them I painted everything and sold it away when I didn't quite like their play style, or I didn't felt like probably I will never play this army. Then I sold them because they also takes a lot of. You come to a point when you have like one, two armies. No problem. But when you're up there to 10 or 11 armies, they take up quite a lot of space.
Yeah, we had to show
Amen.
that sometime, but I just bought new furniture for the game room. We can't see that now because it's chaos. But I have two full bookshelves and another three big cabinets full, not counting the small one here.
Yeah.
And that's only
Jesus.
the painted stuff. And I have an entire like wall with bookshelves where I had unpainted stuff. Like I have so much stuff.
I wanted to do this for a long time, taking every army into the from the local gaming association and just putting it on a big, gigantic table and taking hundreds of photos on all the figures and all the armies that we are done together, because they're so big armies now. It would be fun to see all of them in one room.
But even just the
Yeah.
four of us three and Jonas, we're up to almost like 20 armies
Yeah.
painted. It would be pretty cool to just
I'm
bring them all out and paint them
but if you
or
know that
photo them.
once I did the not the Kislev army but the Norska army for WAP, I know I put up my four armies and counted the models, and I was way above 1,000 models.
Yeah, I
Since
have
but
basically 1,000 models of vampire counts. The
yeah
zombies that
yeah
no,
exactly
not really, but there are a lot of vampires.
yeah you have like 500 night goblins, so you easily bracket me in that aspect. But taking out all your armies, yeah, I think it was when I moved, switched rooms at home, and I was like, this is my one shot to have this strength to place them on a table and take a picture.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of time.
We also had a new, fairly new comment, probably from Patrius Primus. He say, "Heysan, where do you play? I restarted my journey with Oldhammer, played in the 80s, 90s, and he is from, or she, no, he is from Kalmar, probably. So just to say that again, that we are from Storuman in northern part of Sweden. There we all four of us on the channel are from there.
We live, we're not from there, but we live
We
there.
live there.
Yeah,
Some of us
right.
are, yeah, that's some of us are from other parts of Sweden, but we live in the northern
That's
part of
true.
Sweden, Storuman.
Yeah, but we also play sometimes in Umeå, and we go and play in Falun in tournaments, and so you can meet up and play with us at, in other parts of Sweden as well, because Storuman is pretty much in the middle of nowhere, up in the northern mountains. The closest big town is like 3 hours away.
Yeah, really big town.
Yeah,
For
we have.
Swedish measurements.
Yeah, we have a small town 1 hour away, but that hardly counts as a city.
Yeah,
So,
well, it's if
yeah,
it's
it's
got
one.
24-hour stores at
Yeah,
least.
I think it's. I think it's one of the smallest cities in Sweden.
I'm
Sure.
not sure if it's even a city. It
No.
depends on who measure it.
Inhabitants.
Yeah, exactly. If it were in Asia, it would never count as a city, for
No,
example. I mean,
village.
not maybe not even village.
I think it has like 15,000 people or
Yeah,
something like that.
12.
12,000 people,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's
So that's 1 hour away.
yeah,
And 3 hours
yeah.
away, we have a large city with what, 120 inhabitants
Yeah.
or something? So we're
100,
quite in.
120,000.
Yeah,
Just
100.
to
Yeah, 100.
clarify.
Yeah, 120,000. Yeah. So we are pretty much in the middle of nowhere.
13 Matteo, not a fan of the short format, as there is no suspense. Also, we didn't get to see the result of most of the vortexes, so I felt anticlimactic as well. Anyways, that is was my way of saying I really enjoy the long form of battle report that you guys put together. I hope that you make many more as I'll be watching. This is a topic that we have discussed among ourselves, and we have been pretty open about it, that this is just a it's I think it's a two-parter. First one, it's time constraint. We can't have an episode every week if it's a long battle report every week. It takes too much time. But we also like to make the short video good. I would like to be able to make a short video that has suspense, that tells you everything. So it's kind of a challenge to make a good short. I don't know if Mons or Martin feel any different, but I think we agree on this.
I think so. And we talked about this quite a lot. We can give a shout out to Ten Island Gaming that made a lot of like short style battle report for 8th edition. And they kind of fill different purposes. Like if I really want to just learn an army and see how good they are and stuff like that, a short form battle report is really good if you know the game well. While I agree that a long form is more about the suspense and the dice rolls and that stuff. Why short form can just be more about does this work, does it not work, is this good? So I think they fill different purposes, and I think also they, what could you say, like speak to different audiences.
Yeah.
Because some people really like the short ones, some people really like the long ones, and we enjoy making both. So it's never like we're only gonna do shorts, we're only gonna do longs. I think we're always gonna be mixing it a little bit, both because of time and also because that different people like different things.
Yeah, but if to be honest, if we wanted the channel to be as big as possible, we would do long battle reports all day because of how many views those get. We
Yes and
don't
no,
really
we're
have the
only.
time.
No, but we only done one short version. And when we did for 8th edition, the short version, it got way more views than the long ones when we first released that.
And this one actually is pretty good views too. So I can retake that.
I think that when people see a video that is like 35 minutes long versus 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours long, it's way less of a commitment
Yeah.
to watch a shorter video. So, but I understand that some people won't like the long ones, some people won't like the short ones, some people like both. But yeah, we enjoy making both, and it's for Maybe for different audiences, I guess.
Yeah.
I would say though, technically, like behind the scenes, the short ones are easier to film but harder to get right. Because you have to summarize, you have to be very organized to get everything in the right order and don't forget anything. You basically want to explain that unit A played against unit B and they fought at these strengths and this happened. That's like a good summarization, but when you're in it, it's hard to remember everything. So it's easier to record and cut, but harder to get right.
And in
Yeah,
there
with the
they have
longer
with
formats.
the challenge to
Yeah.
getting the short really good. It makes it fun to do.
Yeah, for example, in the short format, I should explain that the vortexes, since they moved in your disadvantage, I chose not to dispel them. That's something I should explain, and it's easy to forget. But you want to go into the shorter formats are more tactical. Why are we doing the moves we do? And the longer formats are suspense, storytelling, and so on.
But I think people also like severely underestimate how much time goes into a long form battle report. Like I had no idea before we started doing this. I thought that it was just like you play a game and then it's like you cut an
Cut
hour or
away.
two. But first of all, like playing a game when you record it takes like 4 to 5 hours around there. Like you have to add at least like 1.5, 2 hours to the game. And then you have to look through. First of all, you have to line it all up with multiple cameras and all of that stuff, so everything is fine. And then you have to watch through it all and cut it. And then after that, you have to add the graphics. So it's easily probably like 15 hours, maybe.
I think it's more. I think you're close to 20 hours for a long battle report, especially if you calculate each player's time. So if we have three players on stream and all three have to allocate 5 hours, that's 15 hours.
But yeah, that's 15 hours. But the editing part is easily like you're looking at probably maybe close to 10 hours editing, and then you have to add graphics, and that adds probably another 5 hours on top of
Yeah,
it.
and you're a good cutter. I don't know what the technical term is,
No,
but
I'm quick at least at
you're quick. Yeah,
the
I would say you're
cutting.
good. I was stunned by the high quality from the get-go when you started, you and Jonas.
So to do like a long video every week, the first you have to allocate like one night with 5 hours per person, and then the person cutting and doing the graphics has to add like another 15, maybe 20 hours if you're unlucky. And doing that with a full-time job, with kids, with everything, it's almost impossible. And it's very hard to share the load of cutting a video as well. Because you can't have multiple people cutting in the same video. It has to be done basically by one person. So, yeah, that's why it's difficult. We would like to produce more content, but it's not as easy as you might think.
No, and even though we allocate a lot of time, it feels like time goes by really slowly or really fast, I would say. You sit down and just want to cut one segment a late night before bed, and you're just stuck there for 3 hours aligning sound and putting in overlays and so on. So it's fun, but it eats up time to edit a video.
Yeah, it's
And we
not,
have
it's
like
not.
probably how many videos do we have now? Like 200? Like if you count out how much time we've spent on this, it's thousands and thousands of hours,
Yeah,
multiple
but
thousand hours.
I just want to say that they nobody have to feel sorry for us because it is fun to do, but it's just that it takes time to make the kind of quality that we would like to have. I guess that the this podcast is the one that is absolutely easiest to do. They take at least amount of time, but everything that we do is something that we just like to do, and they have different kind of challenges.
Yeah, we're not looking to get rich by doing this. Then we would have been doing something else.
Yeah,
It
it's
would have been better to work at McDonald's or something if
yeah,
we wanted
black
to
numbers in
make money.
the
Yeah. But we do it because we enjoy it. And as you said, you don't have to feel sorry for us. But I sometimes feel like I really want to get stuff out there. Like I want to release good battle reports. I want to release many battle reports. And I feel a bit unhappy when we don't. If you know what I mean. Like I really enjoy it, but I really also want to release good stuff all the time. And not being able to do so, it's a bit of a bummer.
And since I and me and Andre got involved, the first thing we looked at was like the viewing, the number of views. But then I've tilted completely against the comments. The interactions is what drives us. A video can have 200 views, but if it has 50 comments, that's great. That's
Yeah.
good material and good learning material for us as well. So that's my driving part. And we've touched the subject before, why we got into the hobby with the stressful jobs and a lot of stuff on the table. This is a way to calm down. And I just feel like since I started cutting videos, just to learn a new skill that is totally derivative of work and anything, just a stupid skill that I'm not gonna make money off. It's so fun to learn new stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's why most of us do Warhammer stuff, to do something else that isn't connected to either money or achievement, just for fun. Last comment, and before we go into this, I'm gonna say that all of our comments in this, if you go into YouTube and you search on this video, if you have listened it only to an audio stream, you can send questions and about everything that we say. But the last one is actually something that I'm a little bit curious of what you as the viewer think, and also us right here. We're gonna say that Jonas isn't here because he has to do some family stuff, eating a dinner. He has to live life. Geeks Workshop, it's great that you have enough room to move your really wide units across the battlefield unhindered by any terrain. So he was a little bit, I would say, maybe salty or trolly when he wrote that. But in the book for the old world, as far as I have read, they recommend that you have very little terrain in middle of the board. What
Yes.
do you as a viewer think of placing terrain on table? Should we have a lot? Should we have less, more? Martin, what do you think? Do you like having a lot of terrain on the board, both from a tactical point, like making it harder to play around, or making it look nice?
Well, doing videos, the looks of the table definitely matter. And when I set the table up, because this was the premier game of the gaming room I'm sitting in right now, and I was thinking so much about the production of the video, and I had a terrain piece that was long and thin, and I wanted to place it so that it didn't obstruct the view of the armies, and still divided the table so you had to choose a path. I didn't know what Mons was going to bring, and he had two large units that just smack boom took one side each. So the placement could be a bit better, and I would like to have more hills and forests. I don't have a lot of those terrain pieces at home, sadly. But I like more terrain. I would like to see more water features, for instance.
Months, more or less terrain. What kind of guy are you?
First of all, I want to say that I think the book has too little terrain, like according to the rules. I think you should have more. But then some also what much Martin touched upon, like we've sometimes placed a lot of terrain on our tables, like a lot of buildings and stuff. But the problem when you're filming stuff is that stuff gets covered from the view of the camera when you have too much, and that is a bit of an issue, I would say. But I think you should have a bit more terrain. But I also think that to make it fair, you should decide beforehand how many terrain pieces you should have, or maybe roll off to see how many you should have. And then you should take turns placing the terrain pieces on the table to make a like build the table together with your opponent. Because I think we used to do that before for 8th edition, and that is a really interesting aspect of the game, like the building of
Definitely.
the table being a part of the game, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not just you come to a finished table.
That wasn't really our idea. It was how they explained that you should make a table in 8th edition, that you should have a roll-off. There's a table or like terrain generator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have a tip for every anyone who plays this game is that you make a deck of cards with terrain. So you have four forests, four hills, four
House
buildings, yeah,
fences,
a lot of
everything.
things as cards. And then you draw a card, take that piece of terrain, put it in at the table, and do as Mons said, that you alternate. Say that you put four terrain pieces each, and you alternate who picks each terrain. Then you have a very strategic mind because you don't know who gets which side
Yeah.
first you start the game, or you don't even know what kind of game is going to happen on the table. So placing the terrain as a part of the game is very fun.
I
It
think
is.
that is a great tip that people should follow. I think that's a great way of doing it.
Maybe we could have a miscast table Kickstarter deck building. We talked about it and a little bit funny, but it would be. We have made a deck of cards that we use in our local gaming association, and I think it would have been a really cool product to have a
Yeah.
terrain building card deck. If
I
Game Shop, if you take this idea, we want
royalties.
royalties, 2% of each
No.
deck.
No, 50
50
for ID.
50.
Yeah. But one thing I want to touch about the terrain before we leave that is that, like, for some armies, like for my Orcs and Goblins, or like heavy shooting armies, like big wide units and shooting lists, open tables are really good. But if you have a lot of terrain, highly mobile lists, like a lot of flying or elite cavalry and stuff like that, gets incredibly strong. So it's not like inherently bad to have, it's not bad for every list to have an
Yeah.
open table, I guess. It depends on what playstyle you're playing. So some armies definitely want a lot of terrain, and it's definitely an advantage for them as well. Like Jonas Bretonnia list with a lot of flying, it will love tons of terrain. It would get so strong if you have a lot of terrain. So it's
Yeah.
not like completely black or white either.
It is a narrative game, so I would say nuances and different terrain pieces are more important than quantity.
But
I would say
that.
like some lakes, a bit of forest, a hill, fences. You need variety on the table to be able to show your maneuvering skills and choices on the table. It is a narrative game.
I mean
Yeah.
that's exactly the Mons point is exactly why it's so fun generating the table together, because if you have two opposing players that have two different play styles, and one of them wants little terrain and one wants a lot of terrain, they can play each other and put terrain in the way they want and try to destroy from their opponent and like and vice versa. So that's what
Yeah,
makes it so fun.
I have a favorite memory where you and me played, Andre, with the random terrain pieces, and it was hold a tower. It was a narrative game where you should hold a tower in the middle.
Watchtower.
Yeah, and I got the wording well, and I placed it next to the tower,
Wow.
and somehow in
No,
the
this
game
game wasn't fun.
I got my Phoenix Guard into the tower, and they regenerated models. Every turn, every start of my turn, I regained like D6 models or something, and they had a 4+ ward save, and they had some to shoot at them. You were -2, and so on. They were just there. They were impossible to kill. You can't charge in and win combat and so on because you only fight with 10 models or something.
That was
They can tilt the whole game.
a scenario that not that many people liked in older edition,
No.
and adding the Virdingvell, no,
Yeah.
maybe Virdingvell, made it
It was
impossible. But
just stupid.
it was stupidly hard, and we had more weird terrain that changed either the units or made a magician stronger when it stood close to it. And
Yeah.
you can have so much fun with terrain. I'm actually a little bit sad that the old world don't have that much terrain or terrain rules. I wish that they will have a campaign book or terrain book or have something that they add on later on that make terrain feel more alive.
But the
Absolutely.
Blood Forest, do you know that one? It
Yeah.
moves when you target something or it shoots out of it with magic. And I know that one game, often, more often than not, people avoid the forest at all costs. But I played one game, I can't remember against who. And we just went bananas. We just shot it so it moved every turn. It really, that was the play of the game. Just screw the forest, let
Yeah.
it jump around the table, and we had so much fun. I don't even remember the armies, the opponent, anything. I just remember the Blood Forest walking all over the table.
I think that is what we had for tonight. Some comments, some rules discussion, and a little bit from what we've been doing. I don't know if you have anything to add or if we can say good night.
I think we can say good night. I can say that I have kidnapped one of your
Yeah, I know there's a hole in my
white lions.
if you check the underside of the it should say 3C, I think.
3C, yeah, it says
Yeah.
3C under here. You're missing that one.
Because they were a pain to rank up, so I had to number each one because there's only one way they can fit on the tray.
Yeah, you're
That's
never getting this
Warhammer.
back.
The best kind of Warhammer is when you have to paint a number and a rank beneath them.
So painful.
Okay, with
Or
that,
that
guys.
I'll swing by and come get it someday.
Yeah,
With
looks
that,
good.
have a nice time. Thank you for listening.
Yeah,
Yeah,
thank you.
see you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.